This is the Middle Chamber Books Podcast, Episode 12, for Wednesday, May 7th, 2008. In this edition of the Middle Chamber Books Podcast, a conversation with Jen Miller, the author of The Jersey Shore, Atlantic City to Cape May, Great Destinations, A Complete Guide, Including the Wildwoods. Jen is a freelance writer who lives in Collingswood, New Jersey. She's written for a number of national publications, and this is her first book. Hello and welcome to the Middle Chamber Books Podcast, brought to you by Go to My PC. I'm Steve Lubetkin, the bookseller at Middle Chamber Books. I'm your host for these podcasts, in which we talk about books, authors, and other creative artists. Our bookstore is an Amazon.com associate. We're located at middlechamberbooks.com. We'll get to our interview with Jen after a word from our sponsor, Go to My PC. Here's the problem. If you commute to work right now, you are feeling the effect of the gas prices. Just think about this. If you worked from home just one day a week, you could save 20%. And Go to My PC is the solution. That's why you need it. Anything you can do on your office PC, you can do it from home or anywhere else. You just log on to gotomypc.com and your office desktop instantly appears, just as if you were sitting in front of it. You work with all your programs and files. You check your email. You can even transfer files. And now, thanks to Go to My PC's generous sponsorship of the Middle Chamber Books Podcast, you can try Go to My PC free for 30 days. Just visit gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast, and you'll get a free trial of Go to My PC. Now to our program. Jen Miller is a freelance writer, editor, and author. From books to music to health to nutrition to travel, her work covers what people want to know and want to know now. She's skilled in taking complicated technical information and writing about it for a general audience, and she also does copy editing and writes marketing materials and websites and press releases for regional hospitals and universities. Jen's articles have appeared in the New York Times, Women's Day, Men's Fitness, The Philadelphia Inquirer, Psychology Today, U.S. Airways Magazine, Poets and Writers, Pages, Wired.com, New Jersey Monthly, and Maximum Health, among others. You can read more about the book that we're talking about, The Jersey Shore, Atlantic City to Cape May, Great Destinations, at downtheshorewithjen.blogspot.com. Jen Miller is a member of the National Book Critics Circle and the American Society of Journalists and Authors. She has an undergraduate degree from the University of Tampa, and she also studied at Oxford University and graduated with honors from the Rutgers University Graduate Program. She now lives in southern New Jersey with her dog, Emily. She stopped by without Emily to visit the professional podcast studios. Jen Miller, welcome to the Middle Chamber Books Podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. And the book is The Jersey Shore, Atlantic City to Cape May, Including the Wildwoods.
Including the Wildwoods, of course.
Now, the Jersey Shore in this context is the Jersey Shore in South Jersey.
It's the southern Jersey coast.
How do we define South Jersey versus North Jersey?
This is a very controversial topic because I did not include Long Beach Island in the book because I didn't think that it fit with the area that Philadelphia, South Jersey and the rest of the Philadelphia burbs traditionally went to as the Jersey Shore. You used to be the only way you used to be able to get to the shore, really, if you were somebody living in Philadelphia, was a train. And you took the train down to Atlantic City. It didn't go straight across. It went down. And then if you wanted to proceed further south, you did that on your own or on catching another train. So I think that really cemented what I found to be the South Jersey Shore. And the thing about this book is that, you know, there's been books about the whole coast, there's been books about one town, but there hasn't been a book about this area that's a book like this.
So how do you go about doing the research for this? You actually go and visit the cities?
Yes. I spent a lot of time walking, sweating profusely through the summer. I wore through two pairs of running shoes. I would park my car and start walking, and I would do advance research to start because I got the book contract in January. So I had some time to spend in the library and reading Best of New Jersey, Best of Philadelphia. I read old travel guides. There's a great book called Oh, New Jersey that's been in many different editions now. And just to see what they had talked about, you know, 40 years ago and what was important. And that played a role in the book too. And then from there, I would have a list of where I must go and then walk just about every single block to find those hidden gems that might not be written about anywhere else.
So what are some of the hidden gems that you found?
There's an alpaca farm in West Cape May. I didn't know that there were livestock in Cape May other than, you know, I know that birding is really popular in Cape May. It's one of the top birding spots in the world, but there's a farm and you can go visit the alpaca and the woman who owns
Alpacas are like llamas.
Little llamas. Yeah. They're about, I guess, 6 feet tall. The woman who owns the woman who owns the alpacas, she will use the fleece and spin it into wool that she'll then knit.
So and she just uses it for herself.
Right.
So selling it?
She does sell it in the farmhouse store, and they actually breed the alpacas. They have a couple champions.
Mm-hmm.
I found this little restaurant called Dixie Picnic in Ocean City that had just been open about a year, less than a year, and walked in. It really doesn't use much air conditioning because it's a Southern-style restaurant. They do have some, but the windows are all open and the fans are all going, and they make these things called upcakes, which are cupcakes flipped upside down and iced on all three sides. I said, well, this is fantastic. It's perfect size. She does all kinds of different flavors. I have to write about this. I ended up taking it on the NBC Den Show.
Interesting. What are some of your favorite places down the Jersey
Shore?
Some
of my favorite places. Well, I spent my summers in Avalon Campground, which is in Claremont, out on Route 9 between Avalon and Sea Isle. And I spent Memorial Day weekend there, and it still was as wonderful as it always was. It's a very affordable option because my parents didn't have a lot of money. They couldn't buy a shore house, even when shore house prices were $150,000, which you can't get that in Avalon today. And it's nice because you're in the woods. It is a little cooler. You're close to the beach, but you're not caught up in all that traffic that's always there in the summer. And there's different things to do. If you're a kid, they have dances and barn rides and tube pools and bands and things like that. So I really still like going there. Hopefully I'll get back down there in the fall. I really like Congress Hall in Cape May for a whole lot of reasons. It's a beautiful hotel. They have a wonderful restaurant. They have a great bar called the Brown Room, which is a brown room done very 1920s Gatsby style. My father got remarried in Cape May in May. And we stayed at Congress Hall. So I would lay by the pool and I watched three weddings in one day. It was fantastic.
That sounds neat.
And it's crowded in the off season too, which I like because I like to spend a lot of time down there in the fall.
Are there any places down the shore that you, having a choice, would stay away from?
I'm not talking about that. There are some areas of Atlantic City that you have to be careful about.
In terms of
safety.
Safety. What about the whole Atlantic City scene, the entertainment, the casinos? Is that it's a big part of the book, obviously.
It is a big part of the book. The biggest chapters were Atlantic City and Cape May. When I was a kid and we stayed at Avalon Campground, my mom would take us to the Showboat on rainy days to go bowling. There was a full-service bowling alley there that's now used for storage. And we would go in and we would go right out because there was nothing else that my mom wanted us to see. And we really thought there really wasn't much for kids. And
has it changed?
It has changed. I don't gamble. I mean, I might play $5 of slots, but I still go to Atlantic City because there's other things to do. There's the pier at Caesars, which has all those great restaurants and shopping. There's outlet shopping. I had the best massage I've ever had at Bally's. So there's stuff for me if I want something to do, or if I have friends in town and I want to take them somewhere different, go to Atlantic City, go have dinner at Doc's Oyster's House, go have dinner at Doc's Oyster House, which has been there since the 1800s, and maybe go see a show. Go see Legends and go see the impersonators do everybody from Britney Spears to Madonna. So there is a lot to do. And then there's another section of Atlantic City called Gardner's Basin that a lot of people don't know about. That's where the lighthouse is. That's where a lot of the marinas are. That's where there's a lot of restaurants that are like on the water, which are really great, like the Back Bay Ale House.
Mm.
So there are other things to do in Atlantic City than gamble.
What were some of the things you found other than the alpaca farm and the southern cooking place, other surprising things
other
that you discovered?
Other surprising things. I found out a lot of information by making friends with locals. And one of the ways I did that was to go play Quizzo. because I would join quiz teams at bars.
Just, what is Quizzo for those
Quizzo
people that are not out in the
Jersey
Shore?
It's a trivia game that's very popular at bars. And it's not just in that area. There's a lot of bars in Philadelphia that do that too. Even the Pop Shop in Collingswood does it. And I would sit at the bar and then ask to join a team. And I ended up joining a team of locals at the Rocking Chair in Avalon. And the bartender's wife was on the team. So they were giving me all kinds of information. They told me about this little small restaurant in Avalon called the Concord Cafe. Now, there aren't many hotels and motels in Avalon Stone Harbor because people mostly will rent a house for a week or 2 weeks. And so I didn't know what to expect in the restaurant. And it's wonderful. They have your build-your-own burger bar. They have the best bar food of any place that I ate at the Jersey Shore. And believe me, I ate a lot. I gained 10 pounds while researching the book. They have an appetizer. It's French fries with buffalo sauce and blue cheese. And it's not healthy for you in any way, shape, or form, but it is so good. And so when people want to know, well, where do I go in Avalon to eat? You know, the Princeton's there and Rocking Chair's there. I said, well, go down to the Concord Cafe. And then there's Wing Night at the Windrift, which is quite an event.
Where's that?
The Windrift is also in Avalon. And there's a bar and there's a restaurant. And they actually set up a temporary kitchen in the bar to accommodate Wing Night.
Now, you have, in the front of the book, you have a photograph of a nun on a surfboard.
I do.
What's that about?
There's a beach in Stone Harbor called Nun's Beach. It is the beach in front of a convent, and every year they have a surf invitational. And I did not take that picture. I took the majority of the pictures in the book, but when my publisher saw that, somebody in Stone Harbor let me use that. They said, we have to put this in the front of the book. And I didn't agree with them at first, but every time I go to sign a book, it opens up to the nun on the surfboard.
It's a great picture.
Thank you.
And she's just barefoot. She's got her nun's habit on and, very...
very beachy.
Very conservative.
Right.
Except for the bare feet.
There's another convent at the very, very tip of Cape May. And for all the erosion that's happened in Cape May, it's still there. It's never been touched. It's never been damaged. So somebody's obviously looking out for those fine ladies. I think it's a retreat.
You also go into trivia about some of the local... quote-unquote landmarks. You have a whole page on Wawa, which is a popular convenience store in South Jersey.
My experience with Wawa was always at the Jersey Shore. That was really where they were popular because there weren't many traditional grocery stores. If you needed something, you just went to Wawa. And then I started noticing them more around here and using them more around here. But Wawa has everything that you could probably need at the shore. And you can tell where Wawa is by traffic jams because their parking lots aren't built to accommodate how popular they are.
Especially now because most of the Wawa stores have converted to sell gasoline as
right.
well. They call them Super Wawas.
Super Wawas. And
their prices are generally a couple of cents below the market.
Right, because they want to get you into the convenience store to buy things like milk, eggs, and newspapers. But most of the shore Wawas don't have the gas stations because there's absolutely no room. There is a Super Wawa in Wildwood that is done in doo-wop architecture style. It's a pretty cool Wawa to visit.
I've seen that one. I have seen that one, yeah. Yeah. And on the approach roads on the Black Horse Pike,
there's a
they've
lot
built
of
a couple of new
there.
Ones.
There is one when you leave Wildwood and pass that Super Wawa. If you get out on Route 9, there's a pretty big Wawa out there.
And in fact, one of the arguments going back to the conversation about what's North Jersey, what's South Jersey, people have said is when you get far enough north that you don't see any Wawas because
right.
north of, what, Freehold, I guess.
Something there, and there is a random one here and there, but it's is it Wawa or is it 7-Eleven? Is it a sub? Is it a hoagie? I was part of a documentary called New Jersey, the Movie that explored this topic very much in depth.
One of the other phenomena in terms of publishing about New Jersey is the Weird New Jersey folks. Do you have
yes.
any contact with them? Or?
No. The only contact I've had with them was someone left me a negative Amazon review because they said they expected the book to be like Weird New Jersey. That's one, and I've written for a lot of different magazines in New Jersey. I even edited one for a while, and that's one that I never was a part of.
Okay.
I guess I'm not weird enough.
Well, give it time.
yeah. They have a great thing going for them, though.
Absolutely. You are active in online social media.
Apparently.
You are known to people on Twitter and some of the other social media places as Jersey Shore Jen.
Mm-hmm.
How do you integrate that into your research? Does it help you find leads for new articles, topics, books, whatever?
I think that I started my blog on July 23rd, 2007. So today that we're talking is the one-year anniversary of my blog.
Well, happy anniversary.
Thank you. I'm very excited. I did a top 10 list. And
The blog is called?
DowntheShoreWithJen.blogspot.com. I was sitting, I believe I was at my new house. I bought my house about a year ago, and it was raining. And I was working on the manuscript, and it wasn't going very well. I was blocked, or I needed to go out down and do more research, and I couldn't. And I had read about how blogging can help you gain an audience, specifically if you have a book that is for a target audience. And I had seen Chris Anderson of Wired magazine talk about the long tail theory before the book came out. And I thought that was a really neat idea, that you can use the internet to find your very specific audience, even if they're not going to be walking in a bookstore and see the book. How do I get to them? How do I get to the people who fly in from California every year to go to the Jersey Shore? So I started blogging, and I did not expect it to do much. I just thought of it as a way to say, okay, you know, I have a book out. Maybe some people are going to find the blog. If I get a few hits here and there, a few links here and there, maybe something will happen because of it. And it ended up being a way to prove to other journalists that I was an expert before the book even came out. So that helped. And I started having readers, and people started leaving comments. I'm like, wow, this could really be something. And then the Inquirer linked to it, and Celebrity started linking to it.
These are other blogs.
And so a friend of mine said, you should try Twitter. And I was like, another thing? Because blogging takes up a lot of time, obviously, and you're not necessarily getting paid for it. And I said, another
few
one?
Few of us are.
Yeah, few of us are. Though I have hopefully sold books from it. And I'm like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And then when it really hit me that it could make a difference was I was driving to West Wildwood to work on an article for the New York Times, not realizing I was driving into a nor'easter that hit the day after Mother's Day. And I was driving over the causeway into Ocean City because I wanted to stop there first, and saw that the water was on the land. And I said, something's going on here. And I had passed Kathy Gandolfo of 6ABC on the way down, so I thought something big was going on. I ended up Twittering the whole storm, and I gained a lot of followers, and I went home and automatically uploaded all the pictures and blogged it, and then Twittered the blog, and it's like my traffic doubled, and the Inquirer picked it up, and again, the clog, Philadelphia Will Do picked it up, which is another blog that Dan McQuaid writes. Kerry Lee of Fox News picked it up, of the local Fox affiliate picked it up. I'm like, this could be good. And it doubled my blog traffic. I had people Twittering me saying, I just sent an email to 40 of my best friends saying to buy your book. I drove to someone's office and sold her a book because she saw it and she wanted to go buy it. I'm like, well, you're up the street, you know. And people have started giving me ideas and telling me, oh, well, I saw your book sold at this restaurant. And I would call the restaurant and introduce myself and maybe set up something with them. And it keeps me in touch with what else is going on. I follow whatever the Twitter handle is for NJ.com, which is the website of the Star Ledger. Mm-hmm. So that gives me a lot of tips and leads of what's going on at the shore.
There's a surprising number of journalists and news media outlets that have Twitter accounts and
exactly.
are sending stuff out.
And I've been picked up by the Philadelphia Inquirer because of that, and PhillyBurbs.com is going to do a piece because I have a tweet scan up for all of the towns in the book, and I found him that way, and it turned out he just got back from the shore and said, why didn't I have this book?
Right, right. So it's just another channel to broaden people's awareness.
It is, and it's a lot cheaper than hiring a PR person because I definitely didn't have that budget.
Ouch.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. So what's next? Is there a book on other parts of New Jersey coming? Or?
I have been approached by a lot of different people. I have been approached by someone to do a history of Atlantic City. I'm not sure if I'm going to do it, though. There's a couple different projects that are possible, and I don't want to talk about them until they happen. I've been back to freelancing again.
And you write for a lot of different publications.
I do.
Who are some of the people you're writing for?
I write for the New York Times, Philadelphia Inquirer, New Jersey Monthly, U.S. Airways Magazine. I'm working on a huge piece for women's health right now that I really should be working on more. Oxygen, Edible Jersey. I write a lot about health and fitness, and I write a lot about sustainable living. So and this has opened up channels there, too, because there's a lot of places down the shore. For example, Dixie Picnic, which is the restaurant in Ocean City. The owner talked to me about – the owner talked to me for an hour about her tankless hot water heater that she got from, I believe, Germany,
mm-hmm.
which requires not nearly as much energy as we waste here heating hot water. So it's like worlds were colliding. And with her restaurant, she uses no artificial ingredients. There's no high fructose corn syrup in anything that she makes. So everything's sort of coming together.
It's arguably healthy for you.
It is.
Even though it's a cupcake that's iced on three sides.
Well, but it's made with good food. It's not something, it's not going to have stuff that's in a Twinkie.
Okay.
And she was named, somebody named her, it's named an upcake best junk food. And she was like, that's a backhanded compliment. There's nothing bad in it. You know, it's sugar and butter and eggs and chocolate. So I just told her to, you know, it'll get people in here. Don't worry about it. Then you can explain what's going on.
That doesn't seem to stop people from eating it.
No. I have a dozen in my freezer right now waiting for me. They call to me every time I'm in the kitchen.
Well, great. Jen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having
me. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you.
Okay. We hope you enjoyed this Middle Chamber Books podcast brought to you by GoToMyPC. Don't forget the free 30-day trial of GoToMyPC by visiting gotomypc.com/podcast. If you have comments or suggestions about our podcasts, please email me at steve@middlechamberbooks.com. You can also send us an audio comment. We'll use it in a future podcast. Send us an MP3 file or call our podcast comment line in the U.S. 856-861-6146. Be sure to use the +1 in front of that. Or in the U.K., in Europe, it's +44-020-7193-6146. Our theme music for this podcast is Cook the Books from the Indianapolis Jazz Orchestra. It's one of the PodSafe music selections you'll find at GarageBand.com. We produce these programs in the studios of Professional Podcasts in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. This is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.